This is the 13th episode of the Walk Magazine podcast.
Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
Hi, this is Cindy Lehman, the former editor and publisher of Walk Magazine and the host of the Walk Magazine podcast. This episode is going to be just a little bit different. Instead of talking about training issues or how to get faster or how to do a long distance race, we're talking about walking for health, and specifically walking as a prescription for health. In this episode, I talked to Dr. Robert Salas, and he's a family physician and sports medicine expert, but he is also the physician spokesperson for Everybody Walk, which is a program that encourages people to walk. He also has a practice at Kaiser Permanente in California and is a proponent of prescribing walking as medicine for his patients. His recommendation is 150 minutes a week or 30 minutes a day. I found Dr. Salas through his blog on the Everybody Walk website. He does a lot of traveling through his work. And when he would travel, he would blog about it and then blog about where he walks in his travels. I found it very interesting, and I just really enjoyed this blog. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. Since talking with Dr. Salas, I've paid a lot more attention to how much I walk. If you've read my blog, you know I've been wearing fitness trackers, and I've been trying a little bit harder to get more miles in and to get more walking in, and even trying harder to get 3 10-minute walks in a day, which you'll find out from this interview is a pretty good thing to do. I'm going to include links to the Everybody Walk app, to Dr. Salas's blog, and to other fitness tracker information in the show notes for the episode. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Salas.
Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
Joining me today is Dr. Bob Salas from Everybody Walk and Kaiser Permanente. How are you today, Bob?
I'm fine, Cindy. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
When we were talking before we started the interview, you said that you were very involved in exercise as medicine. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, exercise as medicine is a program that's designed to encourage physicians to assess the exercise habits of their patients and make an exercise prescription. You know, if you follow the evidence base on the health benefits of exercise, it really is the most powerful medication we have available to us to both prevent and treat chronic disease and to help mitigate the harmful effects of obesity and to lower mortality, premature mortality rates. You just can't argue with the evidence that there really is a linear relationship between a patient's activity level, how much they walk, and the health status they enjoy. That is, those who are active and fit and walk daily, live longer, healthier, better lives, while those who are sedentary and unfit begin to develop chronic diseases at a younger age and die younger. You just can't argue with the evidence. So with that as a backdrop, as a family physician, it just doesn't make sense to me that organized healthcare, that medicine, does not try to harness the power of exercise to help our patients. And so what I would like to see, and what we've been doing where I practice at Kaiser Permanente now for the last 5 years, 6 years, is what we call an exercise vital sign. So when you come into your doctor at any Kaiser facility, regardless of the person you're seeing, regardless of what their specialty is, you're going to get asked 2 questions about your exercise habits. In addition to taking your traditional vital signs, your blood pressure, pulse, your temperature, and they're going to ask you whether or not you smoke. They're going to weigh you and calculate your body mass index, your BMI. And then they're going to ask you, on average, how many days a week do you do at least moderate exercise, like a brisk walk? And they'll record that into the computer electronic medical record. And then the second question is, on those days, how many minutes do you walk? And so what we're recording then is the minutes per week of self-reported walking. And obviously we're looking for adults to do 150 minutes or more a week of walking, 30 minutes, 5 days a week. That's the guidelines from those are the U.S. physical activity recommendations. And so we're just trying to identify patients who aren't meeting that and simply advise them that they need to start walking more to gain the optimal health benefit.
Wow, that sounds like a great program.
It's been very exciting because it was sponsored in conjunction with the American Medical Association and the American College of Sports Medicine, and I actually conceived this idea when I was elected to be president of the American College of Sports Medicine, and it's just really taken off. We've actually spread it around the world. There are 7 regional centers around the world. We're launched formal exercises medicine initiatives in 45 countries or so to date, with more on the way, and we're trying to spread it across the United States. In fact, this next week, we are going to have a big roundtable on how do we make this a standard of care? How do we get every physician in the United States that it's just expected that they're going to ask about their patient's activity habits and they're going to recommend that they walk 30 minutes 5 days a week, just as a standard default exercise prescription?
It sounds so common sense. I can't believe it's not something that's just done automatically.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And what's amazing is we have research studies that have been published in all the major medical journals. You know, the journals that I rely on day in and day out to make treatment decisions about my patients. Scientists have published articles documenting the power of exercise to influence health. Yet in organized medicine, we just seem to ignore those studies. And instead, all our focus is put on pharmaceutical-based studies. And so we've just got this tremendous over-reliance on pharmaceuticals. The first, it's almost knee-jerk for physicians today. If you come in with any problem, they're trying to figure out what pill can I put you on for that. And the patients come in wanting a pill. And we've just got to change that. We have too many examples of pills causing more harm than benefit, particularly in elderly patients. As many as 1 in 4 have significant side effects from medications that require hospitalization. We actually have numerous cases where people have died related to, you know, drug interactions, and certainly, if you start looking at physicians' role in prescribing narcotic pain medicines, my gosh, we kill more people in the United States with prescription pain medications than cocaine and heroin combined kill people. And if that doesn't get your attention, that medicines can be dangerous and we need to de-emphasize the use of medications, I don't know what will, and we really need to see that happen.
That's amazing. I would have never guessed. I'm very, very fortunate that my family physician is very into sports medicine, and he does all this stuff already, so I feel very lucky.
That's good, and I think patients should go in expecting it. And if your doctor isn't asking you about your exercise, and in fact, if your doctor is not first saying, before we put you on a pill for your blood pressure or to lower your blood sugar, I want to start you on a walking program, then they're not following the evidence base. We have great studies to show us that patients are better off lowering blood pressure, lowering cholesterol, improving their diabetes by walking every day than they are by taking more and more drugs.
Right. When you say 30 minutes 5 days a week, does it really matter if it's maybe 2 hours in one day, or is it better to spread it out?
No, it doesn't seem to matter. And if you look at the evidence, it seems pretty clear. If your schedule does not allow you to do 30 minutes 5 days a week, if you want to do 75 minutes on Saturday, 75 minutes on Sunday, from all of the studies, the benefits appear to be equivalent. We also know that breaking it up into real small bite-sized chunks, you know, doing 3 10-minute walks works as good, spread throughout the day, works as good as 30 minutes sustained. We also know that if you bump up the intensity, if you jog instead of walking, you get a 2-for-1. So jogging for 15 minutes is the equivalent of walking for 30 minutes. And, you know, for the most part, you get the same health benefit. You burn the same amount of calories with walking a mile as you get from jogging a mile. It just takes longer. So if your time is in a crunch, then pick up the pace, go a little harder, and you can get the same benefit in half the time by jogging instead of walking.
Well, most of the people who listen to this podcast never run. But we do walk
fine.
Quickly. We do walk pretty quickly, though.
Walking
after them, people run.
Yes. You know, walking to me is sort of the default exercise prescription. You know, anything works. If you like to play tennis, if you want to garden vigorously, if you want to ride a bike, play soccer, all the formulations, if you call exercise a drug, all the formulations of that drug have equal benefit. It doesn't matter which one you choose. Just something that works major muscle groups, gets you slightly winded, causes you to sweat a little bit. That's the optimal intensity, and it doesn't matter how you achieve that. The benefits are equivalent regardless of what you're doing. So walking is perfect, and that's the default exercise that I recommend to my patients.
Have you heard of Walk with a Doc?
Absolutely. Dave Sagbeer
yep.
started this program, and he's a good friend, and we've collaborated on things. It's an awesome program that he's really just trying to get physicians to be role models. We know from research by another colleague, Erica Frank, that when a doctor himself exercises, she calls her research healthy doc equals healthy patient. And we know from her research that physicians themselves who exercise are more likely to prescribe it to their patients. In fact, they're more likely to prescribe preventive care. You could really make a strong argument that they're better doctors. So I think it really starts with the doctor being the example. And that's why I love the Walk with a Doc program that encourages doctors to get out there with their patients.
I've met with Dr. Sagbeer a couple different times, and it's amazing how much benefit his patients have had from that program.
Yeah, it really is a great program. He's a great example. It's just one of the innovative ways that doctors can help their patients get more active, and we need more people doing that.
You had mentioned that you use BMI. I kind of have issues with BMI, as you probably do too. But,
absolutely. It's a worthless measure, but we're forced to use BMI. It's not that I choose to use it. We have to. We are mandated to record in the patient's chart patients who are overweight or obese, and it's I don't think it gets us, does anything but sort of make people mad at me when I put that in their chart, and I don't like doing it, but we're forced to do it.
I think when you have people who are totally inathletic, it's probably much more accurate than if you have patients who are very athletic and muscular.
You make a good point. In fact, there was a study done that's showing virtually 80%, I believe, of all NFL football players were obese. Are you kidding me? No, it just means they're all heavily muscled. And they actually published that in JAMA. You know, like that was a news flash that, all the guys who play in the NFL are big. Well, it's all muscle. It's not fat, and there's no differentiation. In fact, the more muscled you are, the more likely you are to have an elevated BMI than the more fat you are. So, yeah, it's kind of a worthless measure, and I think that just sort of glosses right over. A lot of people were so focused and obsessed with how much everybody weighs that we tend to forget that the important point is whether or not they're active. And we know from multiple studies that you're better off being fat and fit than skinny and unfit. You know, that is a low level of physical activity, low level of fitness, is a bigger risk factor for mortality than mild to moderate levels of obesity. And I think the important message that all of your listeners need to hear is that it doesn't matter if your weight changes. You get health benefits. They're irregardless of weight change. So I don't think that should be the goal of an exercise program. And too often it is. I see too many patients say, I started exercising, I didn't lose weight, so I gave up. No, that's the wrong thing to do. It's not about losing the weight. That is minimally important.
I can see that. Way that I actually found you is through Everybody Walk.
Mm-hmm.
What is the program Everybody Walk?
So Everybody Walk has been an interesting journey that started with our Kaiser Permanente CEO, Chairman and CEO, George Halvorsen, who seeing what I was doing with the exercise vital sign and looking at some of the research that I was talking about in my presentations about the health benefits of walking and physical activity. And he just became convinced that the single best thing we could do for the health of America was to get everybody to walk. And so George conceived of this idea that we should start a campaign to get America walking, and that's how this evolved. And you know, I think you have to pay attention to George when he makes a statement like this. This is a guy who's been a healthcare executive since his early 30s, arguably one of the most influential people in healthcare. He's been on President Obama's and multiple presidents' advisors. He's been part of the World Economic Forum advising on healthcare. And so when George Halvorsen says the single best thing we can do to improve the health of this country from a CEO standpoint is walking, I think that carries a lot of weight. And he's been right. This initiative that we started maybe 4 or 5 years ago has just taken off and gone nuts. And early on, Surgeon General Regina Benjamin called and asked if she could adopt the Everybody Walk campaign as part of her platform as Surgeon General. We've got literally hundreds of collaborators with this program. It's a great website if you haven't looked at it, everybodywalk.org, that has all kinds of resources, articles, videos. It's got an app you can download onto your smartphone to track and share your walks. It's just been an amazing run with this, and the amount of interest and the way it's resonated with all kinds of diverse folks, it's been very exciting.
Well, I actually found the app first and was using that, and then found the rest of the information on the website.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting website. There's a lot of great information on it.
There is. You know, it actually sort of culminated or highlighted in a feature-length documentary film on walking, called The Walking Revolution. And if you haven't seen it, you can watch it for free on there. You ought to tune in. It's got some of the world experts on physical activity and health all interviewed, laid out in a very easy-to-understand format as to why it's so important that everybody get out and walk.
And it's on your website?
It's on the Everybody Walk website, yeah.
Okay. Oh, boy, I'll look for that. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And you are a spokesperson for Everybody Walk, correct?
I am. I'm the physician spokesperson. I've been a family physician at Kaiser Permanente well over 20 years. And, you know, I see this day in and day out that I can sort of gauge the health of my patient by how much they tell me they're walking. And it's almost without fail when I see an elderly patient who I see very easily walk into the exam room, get on and off the exam table. When I do their history and physical exam, they feel great. Everything is normal. It all checks out. Inevitably, the common denominator is those are people oftentimes who are most of the time who are walking every day.
I'm not surprised at all. As being a spokesperson, it probably causes you to travel quite a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it's not just for that, but the Exercises Medicine Initiative as well has become an international initiative. So I travel a lot because there's so much interest around the world in physical activity and health, and really interest around the world on how do we make patients more healthy. There has been such an overemphasis on pills and procedures and medicine. My gosh, we're bankrupting the world with healthcare costs. And particularly in the United States, where we spend three or four times as much as the next healthiest country, and we're actually ranked 32nd in the world in health care outcomes by the World Health Organization. We were dead last in the high socioeconomic group countries in terms of health outcomes. It's really an embarrassment, I think, as a physician, that we're bankrupting our country with a system that just gives very mediocre results. You know, typically you tend to see as cost goes up, quality improves. But in the United States, it's been the exact opposite. As the cost has got higher, the quality of our care in the United States has gone down by every measure of health. And we just can't keep doing it the same way we're doing it. We have got to put a focus, I think, on healthy eating, active living. But the problem is, particularly around the dietary piece, is it's mostly been about labeling people as being fat, and then putting them on a fad diet or trying to convince them they need bariatric surgery or putting them on a pill to suppress their appetite. Those, to me, are just not good long-term solutions. And I see so much deception in the dietary industry. Everybody's pushing their latest fad diet. You know, you'll hear one expert tell you got to eat a low-fat diet, and then the next week it comes out, no, fat is good. We need to eat a high-fat diet. We need high protein, low carb. You know, on and on and on. Yep. You can't get five experts around the world to agree on what to do about obesity. At the same time, though, when you look at physical activity, everybody agrees on the solution. The physical activity guidelines in the United States are exactly the same as they are in the United Kingdom, in Italy, in Russia, Brazil, on and on and on. Every country I go to, we're all saying the same things. There's no arguing about what is the solution. And that's why I believe that physical inactivity is the biggest public health problem of our time. And our Surgeon General has said the same thing, as has the head of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, also said exercise is the most powerful medicine we have. So why aren't we using it? I think it needs a really massive public health movement to improve physical activity levels across the country. And that includes making communities more walkable, shifting transportation away from the automobile and on to public transportation that forces you to walk, creating interesting spaces where people that that lure people in and get them to walk more instead of constantly driving your car to right in front of where you're going, jumping out, running in, then coming right back out with hardly any movement. We really need to change the way we live.
So you're really saying, I mean, when you talk about walkable cities and everything else, that any type of walking is beneficial. It doesn't have to be walking just for your health.
Absolutely. And if you've seen some of the latest, there continues to be this research that's very well done, epidemiologic studies looking at people walking very small amounts, 10 minutes a day, dropping mortality by almost 15%. It's amazing. The real power of walking is on the low end. If you get somebody who's really doing hardly any to just doing small amounts, that's where you really see the big benefit. Now, to be sure, you know, if you're walking the 150 minutes a week and you go to 200, even 300, you get a little more benefit, but the curve starts to flatten out. And honestly, walking beyond about 100 minutes a day doesn't do much to improve your health.
Okay.
And there are some studies to suggest that when you go on the real high end, particularly some of the people who are running really long distances, marathons, or even walking really prolonged periods, you actually may lose some of that benefit. So that a person who's walking 150 minutes may be healthier than that person who's walking, you know, 150 minutes a week, that may be healthier than that person who's walking, say, 100 minutes a day.
Interesting. Because when we're training for some of our half marathons, we are walking quite a bit during that week.
Yeah, you know, I'm not here to tell you that I'm worried about you, that's dangerous, but I don't think, don't kid yourself, going way, way beyond the recommended amounts, it's for reasons other than health, and I think it's a healthy obsession if you really love that. There's a lot more things my patients do that are more less healthy than that. I mean, you know, people like to climb mountains and skydive and ride bikes really fast. You know, there's risks with everything, but I think the evidence is pretty clear. And just think about it logically. You know, if I tell you that a glass of red wine a day is good, does that mean a whole bottle is better? Like most things in life, it's about moderation, right? You don't want too much of any one thing. You know, you need to be moderate about it. And I think physical activity, we're finding, is that sweet spot is about 150 minutes a week. Now, if you want to do more and you enjoy it, I'm less worried about the person I'd like you to have a glass of red wine a day, but I'm, you know, you're starting to become like the guy who drinks three or four, and you know, I'm that's fine. You know, just be careful, but. Don't, you know, it's not as good as just having the one.
Well, we do more intense walking, but we walk pretty quickly. And is there more of a benefit to walking quicker than there is to walking super slow?
Yeah, as I mentioned, you know, when you pick up the intensity, you get the same benefit in less time. So, you know, I kind of use the jogging compared to walking. Jogging, you know, we have good studies to show jogging 15 minutes a day is the equivalent of walking 30 minutes. And so really the main benefit is you get the same benefit from walking a mile or jogging a mile. It just takes a little longer to walk the mile. So picking up the intensity, you get more benefit in less time.
Do we also get the benefit of a weight-bearing exercise?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. One of the things that I noticed when I saw the Everybody Walk website is that you have a travel blog, and you talk about everywhere you travel and where you walk when you're there. And what I found really interesting is that you start out with saying, hey, I'm in Indianapolis, or I'm in Cairo, or Dallas, or wherever you are, talk about why you're there. And then at the very end, you say, oh, by the way, when I was here, here's where I walked. And I mm-hmm. thought it was really interesting.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's been kind of a fun thing to do.
Well, what I liked about it was when you throw the, oh, by the way, here's where I walked, it feels like you're saying, well, you know, it wasn't any effort, and I'm walking too, is the way it feels. Is that how the blog was designed to be?
Yeah, it was interesting just kind of starting out. They asked me to write a few about different places, and then I actually got to really enjoy it just to sort of explain why I was there and what. And I think the other thing that I try to do with it is show how many different constituents there are for the walking message, you know, around the United States, but also around the world. People are all interested in this, and it's resonating with people all over. And so it just – you know, I'm always amazed at the different places I get invited to speak and how I go there. And it's, you're preaching to the choir in every country. You know, there's people just like you, just like us, who believe in this message all around the world. And it's really kind of a wonderful thing, because it's hard to find that with any other kind of public health problem, where you get mm-hmm. such universal agreement. Hey, this is the way you need to live. This is what's the best thing for your health. And we're all agreeing on it, you know, from the physician to the public to on and on and on. People who've experienced it and do regular physical activity know how it benefits them. And we've just got to spread that message in a bigger fashion.
So of those places you've been, where was your favorite place to walk?
I think probably Italy. I love walking in Rome and Venice. I was just back there visiting again, and I loved being there. Another one was Sydney, Australia, and Melbourne, Australia, both cities. But particularly Sydney is a city where they're just de-emphasizing the car. It's really difficult to get around in a car in Sydney. They want you to take the public transportation. They want you to walk, and they've got trains. They've got boats. They've got buses. So it's very easy to get around. And in fact, when I was there, they had a person who was an Olympic race walker give a talk about the time she raced a car across Sydney during the midday traffic and beat the car because
oh
the traffic
God.
Is so slow. And there's a lot of cities that are so much more progressive than most any in the United States, like Vancouver, that is, again, de-emphasizing the automobile. They actually have taken away a third of the parking spaces, I believe, in Vancouver. That's going to make it so it's just miserable to try to drive into Vancouver. They want people to take public transportation. They want them to go into the city and walk. And you know what happens is actually more people come and they stay longer and they spend more money. It's been better for the businesses to have that
really?
Like that. Yeah, it's very fascinating.
So they must have a great mass transit.
They do. And it's kind of sad that in the United States, particularly where I live in Los Angeles, there's just almost none. And it's amazing when you go to a city that's very progressive like that, what it's like to be there. It's a very nice place to visit.
Well, and I think that's one of the frustrations of where I live in Columbus, Ohio, is that there is no mass transit. I mean, we have buses downtown, but unless you're working downtown, they're not very beneficial. I tried to take a bus to where my office is one day, and you can't get there.
Wow.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Just physically
yeah.
impossible.
Same here. You know, we built this railway system called the Metrolink in Los Angeles, and it leaves you off about 3 or 4 miles from the airport.
Oh, geez.
Like, what are they thinking, you know? Yeah, very frustrating. We just don't get it.
But every once in a while, I travel to a city like San Francisco, and there are so many options there. And
I know,
and
you
my
hop
friend,
on the BART and you go, how come yeah. I can't have this? I agree with you. Or New York City.
Yeah, the same thing.
And we so really find that people who live in cities like New York, where there's lots, where they have to rely on public transportation, they're healthier, you know, by almost every measure. And, you know, they weigh less because they're walking all day. They have to walk. It's the easiest way to get around.
And when you have to carry all of your groceries that far to get them home, you're not going to be carrying a 12-pack of pop.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you would like to add?
No, I think we've covered a good amount of it, Cindy. I just think that, you know, you're obviously a great spokesperson for the power of walking to influence health, and your listeners are, you know, that's the sort of the foot soldiers we're battling. I feel like as a physician, I'm battling against big pharma every day when I just want to prescribe to my patient to start with just a walking program. And I'm not saying we never need medications, but I think we have more problems with overprescription of medication than underprescription of medication. And I would just encourage everybody out there to ask their doctor about their walking and do I really need to go up on the dose of my medication, or do I really need to start insulin? What if I went out and walked 30 minutes every day and was religious about it? Do you think that would be enough to control whatever it is you're dealing with? Because it's hard to find a condition that I see, you know, the day in and day out in my office. Almost every person I see, the things that are there that they're bothering them can be dramatically helped by just going out and walking 30 minutes a day. And I just think we need to spread that message and get people to do it. That would do more to improve health in the United States than anything, any kind of pill or procedure I could prescribe.
But what I see is even though I walk several days a week and I do races regularly, if I don't have a race scheduled, I won't walk. So I have to trick myself. So I'm thinking, if I'm that way and I know the benefits, how are you going to get somebody who is sedentary for 40 years of their life, how are you going to get them to suddenly walk 30 minutes a day?
That's a million-dollar question, and honestly, that's what we're trying to figure out. And I think it needs a menu. Some people love to go to the gym. Some people, the answer is getting a dog that forces them to go out and walk. Others, it's getting a social network of friends that push them to go. So for some like you, it's putting an event on the calendar. So I think we need more events so that you always have an event on the calendar that you're training for. And so there are lots of ideas out there, and that's really where we're struggling now, that we're identifying all these people who aren't active. How do I convince them to get out and walk? And we've got a lot of work to do there. That's the next big project that we're working on.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today. I learned an awful lot.
Well, you're welcome. It was good to talk to you.
Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Salas. Even though I've been walking for over 15 years, a lot of the information he gave was new to me. I had no idea that 3 10-minute walks in a day have the same health benefits of 30 minutes, for example. As I said earlier, I will include links to the Everybody Walk app, to Dr. Salas's blog, and to other fitness tracker information that I have. In future episodes of the Walk Magazine podcast, I'm going to talk to some women who did the Dopey Challenge. There were supposed to be 5 of the women, only 2 showed up, but it's a pretty good interview. I think you'll enjoy it. I'm going to talk to some people who recently started walking clubs, and I think it might help anyone who's interested in starting a walking club. I'll end this episode with my favorite quote, "Why run slow when you can walk really fast?" The Walk With Me theme song was written by Gordon Lehman, recorded at Real Time Audio. Recording engineer was Eric Delagard, produced by Eric Delagard and Gordon Lehman. Vocals by Whitney Wilson, cello by Madeline Hansen, guitar and Fender Rhodes by Gordon Lehman. Thanks, Gordon. Da 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 da
Would you walk across the mountains? And if you walk across the land, I'll take you by the hand and lead you to the fountain. Would you walk into my heart? Would you walk into my being? And if you walk into my heart, this will just be the start of the new world you'll be seeing. Walk with me. Would you walk with me? And if you walk with me, I'll walk with you for eternity. I'll never cause you any pain, I'll never cause you any sorrow.